Welcome to this week's podcast of Breakthrough Church from Bayswater in Melbourne, Australia. For more details and further resources, visit breakthrough.org.au. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Hallelujah. So what sort of sermon requires a bow, an arrow, and a big machete type thing? Food, clothing, all sorts of things here today. We've been sharing about something which is central to God's work with people and throughout the Bible, which is His Word, explaining to us how He relates to us and how we're to relate to Him. And underpinning that is a thing called covenant. And I've been doing a bit of reading and a bit of research, you know, through this. I've sort of done it for many, many years, but I've been doing a lot more recently. And the first thing you find out that covenant is not a Bible concept alone. Covenant is a concept used throughout the earth, but the problem for us is it's not very strong in the Western culture. So the modern Western people don't really understand covenant, but many other cultures and ancient cultures understood covenant very freely. So the difficulty is when the Bible is being written, even though the Bible is applicable to everybody of every age, you know, I read the Old Testament that was written, you know, over 2,000, 3,000 years ago, and I'm reading and it's like God's speaking to me and He's ministering to me and I'll start crying and God will give me direction. But when the person was writing it, he wasn't thinking of someone reading it on their iPad. You know, that whole concept to them would have been totally foreign. You know, he was writing some scroll and it would have been read out and people memorized it and things like that. And so they wrote in their circumstances and culture to the understanding of the people there. And so part of the thing is I have to understand that he wasn't writing to me in the culture today. And so I have to pick that up. And so I thought an example would be similar. If I said to you, this didn't happen, I'm just saying as an example, I went to Toyota and got a brand new car this week. And you'd be, oh, that's exciting, and you know, what model and things like that. Now, if I said to you that, you would understand, even though I said, I went to, you know, Ferntree Gully Toyota and got a new car this week, there was a little bit more involved than just going and getting it. You know what I mean? I just walk in, oh, I'll get that one. You know, how many know that in order to get it, what I said in the word get, you understood meant, looked, found, made a deal, paid, filled out a lot of paperwork, got registration, had to provide proof of identity so they could register it in my name, and we had to come into some sort of terms and some sort of finance, and if it involved maybe getting it, meant I'm going to be paying for the next 5 years a certain amount, and I had to have... How many... That word get, pretty big. Yeah. But how many imagine if... I'm thinking, you know, we've got a ministry that we're connected with called... Living Waters Village in Borneo, and they go out into the jungles and they go, you know, days by canoe, and they reach people that are not reached by modern civilization, and they have to do a lot of things there. That's a powerful thing. And one of the things they do there is they rescue children, because in those cultures children are just not seen as valuable at all. And so if someone in the village dies and they've got children, they'll just let the child starve to death. They just won't care for them. They don't care. It's not their business. So they'll go to a village and there's kids literally just starving or sick in the village. And so they'll go to them and they'll make a deal with the elders. They will take those children and look after them. They're like, whatever. But you know, they just come, you know, they have to still do it through the right channels. And they'll take those kids back and they will feed them and put them in an orphanage and train them and equip them. And, you know, and they run an orphanage out in the middle of the Borneo jungles. It's amazing ministry. And then, you know, so they go out there. So if I had one of those people from Borneo, from the back of the jungles, come and stay here, and I say, I went to Toyota and I got myself a new car this week. How many know that would be dangerous? Because he wouldn't understand what got meant at all. He would just think got meant got. I'm going to go get me one of those too. That sounds pretty exciting. So when I say the word got, you understand so much more. It's just a little word that means nothing, but in the context, we understand what it means. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the difficulty is for people that live in with covenant as a normal part of their lifestyle, they say things just really quickly, and we really we struggle to know what they're even talking about because the concept's so big, and they would say something just really quick and in passing, but to them, they understand it all. So they don't explain the process. I didn't tell you about getting registration. I didn't tell you about having to learn to drive, you know, just getting a car and driving out. You've got to have a license. I didn't tell you all about it. I had to learn to drive. I didn't tell you any of that because you sort of understood it. And that's one of the difficulties when we come to the Bible to understand covenant. It's not understanding what the Bible says about covenant. It's what understanding what covenant is often a huge blockage, because people just don't use the term and they don't use the understanding. So I found a book on the internet. It was written in the 1890s by a man, actually, I found who was instrumental in setting up Sunday schools right throughout America. He was like a pioneer of Sunday schools, which is, in one sense, it's actually Sunday schools is a modern sort of concept. It's not something that they used to do in the way that we do, but he wrote on blood covenants, and he just started to do some research. And it turned into, I think, 3 or 4 books and an extended edition, because he suddenly found out there's so much information about blood covenants, and not just what he was finding in the Bible. He was finding out what covenants were like throughout the world and through the ancient world. And so he would do research, and there's a man we shared a couple of weeks ago called Henry Stanley. You might have heard of Stanley. Anyone done history, a little bit of history? He was the one that was sent into the top part of Africa to go and find someone called Dr. Livingstone. Dr. Livingstone had gone on an expedition and they lost contact with him, and so a couple of newspapers paid for Henry Stanley to go and find him and to record the details of what he was doing and write articles. So we have those articles that were then sent back to the newspapers and they were published. So they were like his journals of his journeys. And he discovered that in order to get by and get through those jungles and down the river and the Congo River, he was the one that found out the name of the Congo. It was actually the African name. He went down, they used to call it the Great River, and one time he made blood covenant with a chief, and he's talking to the chief through the broken, the language difficulties, but he's saying, what do you call this? And they said, the Great River. No, he said, no. He said, you're a man, I'm a man, we have a name. What is your name for the Great River? And he said, oh, Congo. So he was the one that found out the name that they gave, and that's how it got its name. And he wrote his journals, and he would find that he fought at least one journal series. He fought 32 full-scale wars just to get down to the end. So a lot of things going on, and he'd write his journals, and at one point they came to him very, very agitated. He'd made blood covenant with them. And once you make blood covenant, that means they go through a ceremony, they cut themselves, you cut yourselves, you join your blood, everything changes. Suddenly they're friendly and they will trade with you, and they're like family. And they came to him and they were so agitated, and the witch doctor was agitated and the chief was agitated. And he goes, wow, these people are... And he goes, we saw you putting magic in your book. And they'd seen him take a journal and write. And they didn't know what it was because they had no written language of their own. And they went back and worked out it must be magic, and it's going to destroy the village because now we're in covenant. He's brought death on everybody. And they said, get rid of it. And he's like, these journals are worth more than anything I've got. They are all the records from my journey. They got all the details and every record. He said, but they were absolutely determined. There's death in that book. And if you keep it, we're in big trouble. So he tried to work out what to do. And eventually he worked out. He had one other book with him, a book of Shakespeare, one of Shakespeare's books. And he said it was so weather beaten because he had read it. One book to read. So he just read it every time, reread it. And get the end and go, what will I read now? I think I'll read Shakespeare. And he'd read it again. What will I read now? I think I'll read Shakespeare. So he went and found this book, and he brought it out pretending it was his journal. And he says, oh, here's the book of bad magic. And he set it on fire. He said it was a real sacrifice, but he burnt his Shakespeare. And he said he went from the devil himself to... He said suddenly he was the hero of all the people, the white man that was rescued their families and their kids, and he hugged them. They just thought he was the most amazing man ever. And he said, I lost my Shakespeare. So he had to learn how to deal and to work. But the covenants played such an important part in that. And there were ceremonies. And it said that he said he actually made over 50 covenants. He had scars. He'd also, his right-hand man would often make a covenant with him. They'd cut their legs and they'd bleed and things. So, he's always like, look to your right man, Cam, come with me to meet the chief, because we're going to make blood covenant, and you get to do the cutting, so how exciting is that? And so I've been reading a lot about these covenants, which are both ancient, but also quite modern in our society today, but we just don't know about them. You know, like the American Indians have blood brother, which is a form of covenant, the cutting and the making of a scar. And so, you know, the white, the pale face and the American Indian, once they cut, they become one. In fact, the understanding is when you mix the blood, suddenly your blood's in me, my blood's in you, we're together, we're one. And we, you know, the difference between a person of covenant and a good friend, or a person in agreement, it's sort of to the extent of these conditions and things like that. But and a friend, you know, if you go to a restaurant and I get to the restaurant, I'm sitting down eating, and I go, oh, I've left my wallet. I say, Graham, would you mind? I'm really embarrassed, but could you pay for my meal, because I don't know? And you say, yeah, we're friends, I'll do that. But the difference between a covenant is, if we go to a meal and Christine forgets her purse, she says, give me your wallet. She doesn't say, oh, I'm really embarrassed, I'm sorry, I've left my wallet, would you mind? She says, give me your wallet. Because, see, that's what's in my pocket is hers already. That's a covenant. See, she's not using mine and I'm not using hers. It's ours. Sorry, what are you saying? Oh, this is my wife, Christine. yeah. Give me your money. Whenever I go with this lady from the church, I'm not sure who it is, just takes my wallet. It's really embarrassing. We better get married so it becomes better. Explain the four kids. So, covenant means we don't ask, that's ours. All right, now, you know, you'd be polite, say, can I please have your wallet? But she doesn't say it in the way that, oh, maybe you won't. Because there'd be never any sense of, no, this is my money. This is my wallet, you know. That's because that's how we work. Covenant becomes a blending. And and marriage is a covenant. That's what in the Bible it's called, a covenant. You know, I remember when I was asked by my niece to do a ceremony when she was getting married, and she's not a Christian, doesn't come to church, so I said, oh, I'll gladly do it, but I need to talk to you about this. And I just sat down and I didn't talk to them about the marriage ceremony, I talked to them about covenant. I said, guess what, you're going to become blood brothers. Let me explain what marriage is about from the term of covenant, because, you know, otherwise they don't really understand. They're going to think it's, you know, some people say it's only a piece of paper. No, not at our church. And people say, I'm not getting married in this church. No. We don't put a scar on you. We put a ring to represent a scar. So I hold my hand up. He says, oh, you are holding a scar. So if we could look in the Bibles, in 1 Samuel. Chapter 18. You wonder all what this is about here, because in the Bible it talks about covenants being made, but it doesn't. It often just will say a few things, but it doesn't explain all the elements of it, because it just presumes you know. Of course you know. When they say covenant, you know. When I say get the car, I don't have to explain the 12 steps of getting a car to you, because you know. But the difficulty if you don't know seems a little bit strange. And so when they mention covenants in the Bible, they often will mention one or two elements of it because they're significant for that particular element, but they won't mention all of it. All right? And so we've got a list here that I've been able to get. So I didn't make this list, but, you know, there's lots of lists down there, and, you know, you have different amount of steps depending on which covenants you're talking about. There's another word for covenant. I read this years ago and I could never find it again. Suzerainty. Anyone heard of the word suzerainty? It's an English word. You think I'm speaking Greek or something like suzerainty. Suzerainty is the word for, for countries. At the moment, how do we stop one country going into another country? Well, you put a wall up, but, you know, I mean, there's got to be more than a wall. There's got to be an agreement. And we call it international law. What do we do when someone, an Australian, is caught doing the wrong thing in another country? We apply international law and we transfer them, or we do things. We have agreements all over the place, and now we use something called international law to do that. because, you know, Australian law only applies to Australia. And suzerainties was the phrase for what they had before international law, which would be how one kingdom would relate to another kingdom. Normally it meant one bigger kingdom would deal with a smaller kingdom, and he'd say, listen, you could go on being your smaller kingdom, but we're really in charge. It was a really strange sort of thing. You're totally free to do whatever you want as long as we tell you you can do it. You know that type of... You're totally free. In fact, in China, China's understanding of how they with the world was, they actually believed that China was the emperor, was the emperor of the whole world. Chinese and everybody. Their legal system didn't understand anything except the emperor is. So in the 17th, 18th centuries, there was a bit of a clash as the other empires began to grow, and they had to adjust because to them, suzerainties was basically, we let you exist because we're China, and the emperor will do that. It was but others, you know, all through the Assyrians and the Babylonians, everyone's had this sort of relationship. And I've actually found a document which is the process the suzerainties from the Assyrians had many years ago. And when you look at it, it's almost identical to a covenant process. So suzerainty was the national covenants they put together. That's how the world stayed not at war all the time. And we know that doesn't work all the time because then there's wars. All right, but for when to keep it at peace. So this one gives the 8 steps of covenant making, and from the Bible, but from other cultures as well. It's a mixture of other places. So let's go through these quickly. It's because when it says make covenant, in fact, let me even say this. If you're reading in your English Bible, it'll say he made covenant with someone else. The word made isn't made. It's not the English word made. It's the word for cut. You don't make a covenant. You cut a covenant. All right, so they never made a covenant. No one made a covenant with anybody. They cut covenants with somebody. All right, and it was because cutting and bloodletting was just a part of it. So you never made a covenant, you cut a covenant. I've heard it said that cutting a deal goes back to the concept of cutting a covenant. But I'm not sure that's true. That's, you know, this because cutting a deal is a modern term. So it could be related to a number of things. But, you know, interesting concept. Cutting a covenant. So, 8 steps to cutting a covenant. Number one, the pre-ceremony actions. Before we enter into this, we've got to work out who I am, who you are, you know, so I'll tell you my deeds, and we've got to remember some of these are very officious things. This is 2 nations maybe, or 2 tribes, or 2 family groups connecting and joining together. This is going to not only impact the next 1 year, it's going to impact the next 5 generations. So these are very serious times. So I will say who I am, you will say who you are, and you know, we talk about what's going to happen. So there's a lot happens beforehand. Number 2, the selection of the covenant representatives and the cutting of the covenant sacrifice. So we said, okay, we need, who's going to actually get the cut? Is it the king? Is the king going to have the scar? Is it going to be someone who's going to represent the nation? You're going to get your child, you're going to get... someone else. And then there's the cutting, not just of yourselves, but something has to be cut because this is too important to happen without blood being shed. So. Oh, no. See, Westerns, we'd be hopeless with covenants. Do you know what I mean? No! You know? So, and I thought to make it more realistic,
no.
I thought, I could have. So you can all sleep at night. You just got to pretend. So what they would do, they would actually cut the animals, and they wouldn't cut the head off, or they wouldn't cut it in half. They would cut it right down the middle. Right? There's actually this has got a nice seam all the way. It's a pre-done sacrifice, been put back together. They would cut it, split it right down the middle. And then they lay the 2 halves. So I'm not going to do that. But they would lay it so the 2 halves were side by side. And then they get the representatives, who's going to do the work and who's going to do the cutting. Let's go. Number 3. Let's read for this. I took you to 1 Samuel chapter 18. Because 2 people in the Bible, and we spoke about this last week, Jonathan and David. I'm sorry I can't go back and give the background. We'll put these messages all up on our internet, so you'll be able to get them all and listen. Last week I explained who Jonathan and who David were and how that covenant came about. I just want to talk about the ceremony at the moment, so please excuse the fact that I can't give the background. let's just concentrate on what they did. In 1 Samuel 18, verse 2, and Saul, that's Jonathan's father, who was king of Israel, took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. And then Jonathan made a covenant with David. All right, so the significant part is Saul, who is king of Israel, has David, who is one of his loyal servants and warriors, but he is intensely jealous of David because God is raising David up to become king because Saul, through his disobedience and through his pride, has ruined his kingship. And God has said, I've picked David. Now, the trouble is, the next person in line is Jonathan. Jonathan should be the next king, but God has said, no, I'm going across to someone outside of the Saul family called David. But what happens is that Jonathan has grown so close to David, they're like brothers. And his dad is furious and he actually wants to kill David. And Jonathan's like, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to kill him. And initially he thought, oh, I'm just misreading it. Dad's not really that angry. He's just sort of spouting off. But then he began to realize, no, he's serious. He wants to kill David. So he tells David, you've got to flee. But before he sent him away, it said, then verse 3, Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. And it says, Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. Now, there would be a lot of other things that happen. Like I said, he's just mentioning a few things out of all of them, not because the other things wouldn't have happened, but because everybody knew the other things would have happened. Mm-hmm. But there's a few details here that he said, we want you to know what the exchange took place, and it involved. Now, I do apologize. This was the only robe I thought that I could bring. So I want Phil to come out here. No. I'll put it on back to front for you, Phil, if that's all right. Phil, I need you. Because, Phil, if I'm going to do an illustration that shows Bible times, I think Phil's been readying himself for this for 12 months, you know. If I want someone to look like they're from Bible times, we have Phil, all right. He's also provided some of the weapons here. So, okay, so if I'm making a covenant with Phil, and it says, I take off my robe. Now, initially when you just read that, you think, oh, well, he's just giving him his jacket, all right. But you've got to understand that the clothing meant so much more. I'll come back to it later. So let's just do it at the moment so you can just put it over. Put that robe on.
No photos, please.
And then what does it say? He exchanged his robe and gave it his armor, his sword, his bow, and his belt. All right? Armor there is actually the word for tunic, his other clothes, which meant that was a special robe he gave him. And then he gave him his other jacket, his other clothes, which were to do with probably his fighting. So you get double jacket here, get everything. Sure. I'm not sure what he was wearing at the end of this ceremony, but he'd pretty much given him all the outer stuff to help him. And then he takes his belt. Now, when we think about a belt, in our culture, a belt is to keep your pants up. All right, just think about that. That's not really needed in ancient times because they didn't wear pants. All right, they're wearing some sort of tunic, and this would just go around. So why do you need to wrap a thing? So Phil, I'll take this. So you can wrap this around you. So I didn't get a leather belt because it's not. It is more of a sash. All right, and the reason being is the sash was where you put things. So you don't have pockets, you know, in your pants because you don't have pants. All right, and so yeah, you would put that, you'd have your ceremonial dagger, and so that would be sort of hanging on your sash. That's pretty cool. And the other thing that not mentioned here. Now we're talking. You'd have your money belt sort of wrapped up in your sash or something like that, because you know you don't have it in your pants and you don't have a credit card. So when he's transferring this, guess what else he gets? Oh, I'm giving him my resources. This is the king's son. So that's the best armor, that's the best sword, and that's the best money that the king can provide, except for the king himself at this time. All right? And the significant thing was that the garment he given. Now, so when you talk about clothes, it's not just, oh, here's my jacket and things like that. Imagine if I was in the army. All right? When you're in the army, they don't honor the person, they honor the stripes. Okay? What you're wearing. The soldier won't come up and say, I don't recognize that guy. They'll say, yes, sir, when they see the stripes. They don't have to, they don't even know, they might never have seen him before, but if he walks into the room and he has a rank of a certain height, and how do you know? Because he'll be wearing something with that rank on it, they immediately snap their attention. If he tells them to do something, they'll do it. Because they respond not to the person but to the uniform, because the uniform represents who they are. All right, so that uniform is them. I don't say, it's sort of, oh, I'm sorry, but you're wearing a colonel's coat, so but I don't, you don't look like a colonel. That's the way to get in a lot of trouble in the army. All right, so your garment represented more than just you, it was your whole rank, your person, your relationship, and there was a garment that was representative of the fact that he was a king's son. So he was wearing the king's son's garment. That's why it actually says, when it says armor in the Bible, that word armor is actually not armor. It's actually a second lot of clothing, which they're guessing is to do with the armor. All right. So the first, he gave him two lots of clothing. The first one was the special coat, and the second one was his other clothes, because the first one was the king. The only person who wore that was the next in line to the throne. So he's actually saying, guess what? I'm giving this over to you now.
Fits nicely.
Yeah. All right. And so there was a transfer. And so then he'd say, and I'm giving you everything that goes along with that. So you get my bow. And what that means is, not just the weapons, it means your safety is now my concern. Your protection is my concern. Everything I have, if you have a need, you don't have to ask. And it's not just till that money runs out. That's just representative. You know, you don't get just two arrows.
You got access to the wallet.
You get the credit. You get the PIN number. All right, to everything. All right. A joint account isn't 50-50. It's one puts it in and the other can take it out. So this represents. Hey, if you're in trouble, you don't even have to think. I'm with you. You know what I mean? If someone's looking ugly at you, they're looking ugly at me. It's how covenant works. That's why Henry Stanley, when he was traveling through the Congo, it was such a huge thing. Once he made covenant with the chief, just turned the situation around. Because suddenly he had the backing of a tribe, not just himself, and that would also help them with the next group they are facing and things like that. So what's the next thing that we've got here? Yeah, so if we go back to number four, we do the walk under death, all right? So what that means is now...
Hang on. It was going well.
All right, so what happens now is we walk, there's two pieces there, and we're going to walk a figure eight. So you've got to imagine the second one, because there's only one piece here. But we would walk between us the figure eight. So we go between the pieces. Now, whilst you're doing this, you're walking all through, the blood is splashing on my sandals, it's splashing on your sandals. We're getting blood all over us because, you don't cut an animal in half like that and it looks nice and neat. So we are walking in the blood of this animal, and we are doing the walk unto death. And whilst we're doing that, I think number five, we're saying a few things. The pronouncement of blessings and curses. So this is really interesting because it's in all the in the covenants and suzerainties and everything. And some of them that Henry Stanley talked about, his ears would burn when they heard some of the curses they would put on, because they'd be really extravagant. What would happen to anyone who dared disobey this covenant? And they called down all the curses they could think upon that person. And of course, and so he could, he wasn't able to speak their language always. So he would have his interpreter or his chief guide would come in. And sometimes his chief guide would get right into it. And he's like, well, if you think that's the curse, I'll tell you the curses. And his chief guide would pour down even bigger curses on the chief. And he's like, whoa, guys, this is pretty intense here. So that would really get into it, curse against curse. We have actually examples of that in the Bible. I won't go into it now, but there's one in Jeremiah, and we'll talk about it maybe another time, where it talks about the fact that they called curses upon themselves if they didn't fulfill this, because then they didn't fulfill it, and they got the curses. And God's like, well, you shouldn't have said it if you weren't going to do it, you dummies. You've brought this on yourselves. But they also speak of the blessings. Hey, I'm going to give you this and I'm going to do that. And you can see that in the Bible when God spoke to Abraham, said, I will bless you and I'll bless you and I'll do this. And then it went on to the children of Israel, Deuteronomy 28. It's got full of blessings, all the things that God was going to do. So curses and blessings, standard. Not just Bible, but any two kings, any nations were doing that. Next, number six, the seal of the covenant mark. So this is where I'll need that knife. And we, you know, somewhere... Oh, you've got a scar there already.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The covenant I had earlier.
Is there someone... Ange, can I just see your wrist? How seriously have you taken this thing, Ange? If she's got a mark on her arm just there, just casually, well, you've done. All right. So, yeah, we would mark and mix, and they'd mix it with salt, they'd mix it with ash and things like that to make the scar really prevalent, because they wanted to show you the scar. It's important. And so the seal of the covenant mark, and number seven, the exchange of names. This is one that there would be an intertwining of our lives through the blood. So now there's also an intertwining even of our names. And so we would connect, and we would put ourselves together.
Won't go. I'll be known as Peter.
Yeah. Well, no, you'd be known as Phil Peter, and I'd be known as Peter Phil. Mm. You know, we'd combine and work together. And it's not. Listen, and sometimes it'll just be a ceremonial name, depending on what they're doing and things like that. But it's in the Bible. Abraham got his name changed to Abraham. The name for God, personal name, won't go into it, is Yahweh. It's got a sound in it. It's like Yahweh. Okay, it's interesting, when God changed Abraham, he put the ch sound right in the middle of his name. All right, so he actually got a name that had the middle of God's name put into it. And when, how did God change his name? Well, you see in the Bible, he's often referred to as the God of Abraham. That's my name, that's who I am. He's not just God anymore, now I'm the God of Abraham. So he aligned himself with Abraham. I'm the God of Abraham, God of Jacob, God, you know. So he became... So it's interesting how there was an intertwining there of those things. Next one. Interesting fact, the guy who wrote this book in the 1990s, when he did more research, he wanted to expand it, and he actually said, I have found out so much. He said, I'm actually taking out, I found out so much about, there's three other covenants. One of them was in the exchange of names, the covenant of names. And he said, I've got so much information, I'm not going to put it in this book. I'll get to it later. And he wrote a book on the other two, but he never wrote the book on the covenant of names that I could find. So I was like, man was too busy. Number eight, the covenant meal. And then we would sit down. And see, a covenant wasn't a covenant until you'd shared a meal together. And it was the final part, the sharing of the meal. And we'd sit and we'd eat and we'd share. And that was, you know, and we talked about that last week. The access to the table and the connecting that happens, how important a meal is. Give Phil a big hand. He was willing to put on. You can take that.
If it was a real covenant, it would have been a tin can.
Yeah. I'll take this off you because it'll make you, you know, yes, shake and shiver back there. For So that is a covenant ceremony. It's a typical covenant ceremony. Not every ceremony, I'm guessing, would have every part. Different nations, different tribes, different circumstances. But that would be typical and cover much of what... And some of the core things that I don't think I've ever seen in any covenant that didn't include, number one, the cutting and shedding of blood. That's why it's a blood covenant. Life has to be poured out. And number two, the vows and the pronouncements. It was always about what the covenant represented. And so there was always vows made, there was promises made, there was... in many cases, there was curses spoken of if you didn't fulfill this. So they're the sort of the essential things. But all the other things would be there. The meal. I don't think there was probably ever a covenant where there wasn't a meal, because so many cultures, it was just, that's where we finish things. And they would call upon their gods, you know, in different covenants. And obviously in a covenant with the living God, you call upon the living God. So I want just to take a moment to think about the exchange of coats and the exchange... Because we looked at all it one way, and it talked there about Jonathan giving it to David, not because it wouldn't have happened the other way, but because it was significant to them. They're saying Jonathan gave the kingship over. He released the kingship to David through his love of David. All right, so that's why that was mentioned, and that was particularly brought up. But David also exchanged his life for Jonathan's. And we spoke last week about how when Jonathan had been killed in battle, and many years later when David is now king, and all of Saul's family off hiding in the wilderness, and David says, is there any of Jonathan's relatives still alive? And he finds out there's one called Mephibosheth hiding in the back blocks of a place called Lo-debar, and he gets him brought to his own palace, restores all his grandfather King Saul's provisions and farmland to him, gives him a servant, and actually says, you are now to eat at my table with my family. So it David was not only making it with Jonathan, but to the generations below. And so he made that covenant with the next generation as well. So Mephibosheth, who had never ever met David, was actually brought into the king's table and was able to eat with him and be a part of his family. That's how covenant works. But the one thing I want us to talk about is this exchange of coats, because a coat is a very central concept to way how the people in the Bible saw life. Your life was seen as a coat. It was something you take off and something you put on. Turn with me to the book of Psalms. This is a negative sort of illustration, but it sort of captures it. Psalm 109, verse 18. Now, a lot of these things are very hard for people who are doing the work of translating. I really admire people who have to translate a Bible because they're working from other languages. Well, not just other languages, other concepts. How do they bring concepts that are lost to us many times? And so they try and work this in. But it says, he clothed himself. This is talking about a person in a negative way. He clothed himself with cursing as with his garment, and it entered into his body like water and like oil into his bones. In other words, he so made these curses part of his life. They said it was like he wrapped his coat around him. That means if you do that, it's yours. You are this. Yeah. Right? It's not just something you say, oh, I take it off at night, and that's not really. See, in the West, we think clothes aren't me. Because if I'm wearing this, I can take it off, throw it away. It's just something on the outside. But to them, it represented you. It was an external picture of what was happening on the inside. They didn't have that distinction like we do of, oh, it's just a coat. So when they talked about their garment in this sense, they're talking about your lifestyle, who you are. So it often talks about lifestyles as if it's a garment. So turn with me to the book of Ephesians. Now this is all, chapter 4, Ephesians chapter 4, this is all with the understanding that when God says, now I want to, God, the living God, the God who made heaven and earth, the God, says I want to relate to you, I want to have a relationship with you, I want to deal with your lives and I want you to know how to deal with me. He said, how can I define that? He said, well, we'll make a covenant. If I make a covenant, then you will know how we are to relate to each other. That's an awesome thing. And you say, well, the problem is that, God, how could you make a covenant with me? He says, I know. Because if I pronounced on you the curses, if you mess up this covenant, guess what? First thing you're going to do is you're going to mess up. And all the curses are going to be on you. And, you know, you'll be just a little greasy spot in the road somewhere. Because, you know, you will not be able to fulfill a covenant with the living God. He said, so what I'm doing, he says, but you're in a messed up state and I need to be able to relate to you. So he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring a representative in to represent you. So just like I got Cam and he would take the someone will come in and step in and they will become the representative and they will actually establish the covenant. And in this case it was just another man, so it wouldn't make any difference. But what happens if God himself put his own representative, a pure man, Jesus Christ, who came from heaven, is God, is able to relate to God face to face, yet he's still a man, so he can be the covenant connection for us. He can make the covenant and not end up as the greasy spot. He can actually deal with it all and says, okay, we've got a problem here. The person I'm representing, he's got a lot of problems. It's got to be dealt with. I can't bring these problems into the covenant without messing it up. So he says, now, remember we talked about the curses coming out. Jesus said, what I'll do is I will take the curse onto me and you deal with me all the curses. So when I'm hanging on the cross, all your curse came onto him and he satisfied all that. So he dealt with that. Not me, because I couldn't do it. All right, you can't, you know. I often said, you know, if I'm going to jail for 10 years and Cam's going to jail for, sorry, Cam, you're just on the front row, your problem. Cam's going to jail for 10 years. I can't say, oh, listen, let Cam go, I'll do the 10 years for both of us. No, it doesn't work like that. We both get to do our 10 years. The only way you can do that is I don't deserve to be in jail, and I can say, I will do 10 years and you don't do any. You know, you can, only the person who is totally blameless can absorb someone else's problems. So no one, Jesus is the only one who could absorb our curse and deal with it because he didn't have any of his own. So he dealt with it, and he, in doing that, he set up a covenant with God. And in the Bible, it's called the New Covenant, the brand new covenant that God has dealt with, and then it defines. So if you're reading the Bible, what you're really understanding is it's describing this new relationship with God that we have through the covenant. You need to see it through covenant lens. You need to understand it's not everything is a covenant ceremony, but it's all underpinned by this concept of covenant. So Jesus has entered into a covenant with God for us. Now, all the things that we talked about here in a normal covenant ceremony, even though they weren't necessarily done, they are all understood to be a part of it. And the garment, this coat thing, is really important. Because you've got to imagine, I've got a coat, and Jesus has got a coat. Phil, why don't you come back here? You look more like Jesus than me. All right, let's say that the Collingwood coat is the sinner's coat.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, that sort of works. I'm a Collingwood supporter, if you don't know. You know, when we lost the grand final, a lot of Collingwood supporters were grinding their tooth in disgust. Okay, so this is your coat. This is Jesus' coat. And whenever God looks at Jesus' coat, he sees everything it represents. So that's got the stripes are of Jesus. All right, the highest mark totally gives him access. It's, you know, today we would have a lanyard. You know what I mean? With a certain pass, it would tell you. That lanyard defines where you can go in certain places. Who you are, the access, what you can do. You walk in some place with a lanyard, you go right through. Other people are like, oh, where you go? You know, I remember once I was working in an engineering company, and I had to go into the Victorian barracks in St Kilda Road, and we were doing works there for them. And I had to get a lanyard and a badge and stuff like that. And I said, is it really important? How important is it? And the engineer told me, he said, if you walk in there without that lanyard, big trouble. He said, you can be buck naked, but if you've got the lanyard on, that's all they're looking at. They won't care about it. All right, they said that lanyard becomes all they see. All right, and he said, so if you're not wearing the right one, you're in big trouble. If you're wearing the right one, you got complete access, all right? So this is who we are and our relationship. And when God looks at it, he sees all that Jesus is. It represents Jesus. It's Jesus to him, okay? We see a coat, but he sees it means who he is. So I have a coat, and it's all my sin, black. All my shame, all the things I've done. And I'm wearing this. And Jesus said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll come to the covenant. And he said, give me your coat. I will become all you are. And then let God, now when God's looking at him, what does he see? He sees who I am. It's not just something on external. You have to put it away. It's not just an external thing. It actually becomes him. And he actually deals with him. That just represents him. All right? You know, when I said before, you know, like a colonel in the army or a general in the army, we know that the coat doesn't make him a general. He's a general because he's a general. The coat just shows you that he's a general. But if you took the coat off, he'd still be a general. All right? This shows you what's inside. And he has become me. And so he is dealt with as if it was my sin. But it's an exchange, people. Covenant's about exchange. Who's got the other coat? If he's got my coat, what have I got? Well, that's Jesus' coat. Better put that down there and not touch it. Too special for me.
Well, I gave it to you to wear.
Yeah, but this is the Jesus coat. I'm not Jesus. How could I ever wear that coat? That's not me. Do you understand? It's like there's an exchange here. A coat has been exchanged. He's taken my coat, but he's also given me his coat. And he's expecting me to put it on. All right? So give Phil a clap. You can leave that one here. Any man that's got to put a Collingwood coat on twice in one morning. Okay, so let's have a look at Ephesians 4. Let's read from verse 22. In reference to your former manner of life, okay, your way of being, who you are, you lay aside the old self. See the terminology is a coat. It's like a garment. You lay it aside. You take your old life and lay it aside as if it's a garment. You lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance to the lust of the deceit. You take that old person, yep, verse 23, and you get changed in the way you think, in your very spirit. You've got to learn not to think as if you've got this old coat on anymore. And verse 24, and then you put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God, has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. Verse 25. Okay, talks about that. Go to Romans 13. Verse 12. The night is almost gone and the day is near. Therefore, let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Whose armor is that? Verse 13. Let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing, drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy. In other words, don't keep living in this coat. Verse 14, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ. Actually talks about this as being put on Jesus, his coat, who he is. One more scripture. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21. He made him, Jesus, he made Jesus, who did not know sin, to actually be sin. Not be like sin, not represent sin. It actually says to be sin on your behalf. So that we might become the righteousness of God that's in Jesus. He took my sin on him so I could take his righteousness on me. So I now have a coat that when God looks at me, he sees the righteousness of Jesus, the perfect ability to come in. Now, it says in Ephesians, it's a three-step process. You've got to learn not to live in this way of thinking. Then you've got to change, not just, it says the spirit of your mind. In other words, the spirit of your mind is sort of the essence of why you think what you think. It's change how you think about life, not just a few thoughts, but actually change. It says change from thinking, this is what I do, this is how I behave, this is what I should do. And put on this and learn how to outwork this righteousness. But it's your coat now. It's an exchange. A covenant is a covenant of exchange. Covenants are exchange. They're not just, see, Jesus worked this exchange for us so that we can come in on it. Normally it's the two people getting the exchange, but we're getting the extra benefit because the covenant's been done on our behalf. Can I get you to stand with me? This is an opportunity that has been done for us. In fact, stay standing. 2 Corinthians 5, we were just reading it. Verse 18. Let's go back just a couple of verses, what we were reading. It says, now all these things are from God who reconciled us to himself through Christ. In other words, he said, I've dealt with it. Okay, everybody's life of sin has been dealt with in Jesus. Already done, already dealt with. But he says, now I'm giving you, the church, this ministry of reconciliation. Go verse 19. Namely, this is your ministry, this is what your job is. That God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. He's not counting their trespasses against them. And he has committed to us the message or the word of reconciliation. So in other words, our job is to tell people this is what has been done so that they can embrace what has been done. they can by faith say, I receive that. He can do it on your behalf, but he can never force you to come and receive it. He can't make you put on the coat. Does it make sense? He says, I've done it for you, but you've got to choose to come. When Kyra was talking before about standing on that rock, and she said, there's the apple, and she's so tempted. I could do this, I can do this, I can do this. But the trouble is, the coat's here and the apple's there. And you sort of say, I just do it myself. Do it myself. Do it myself. I'll do it myself. This life is all about God saying, no. Stop. It's an exchange. It's an exchange. You've given up that old way of living. You're not going to do it this way. You're going to come to me and you're going to trust me and I'm going to do it. And you know what? My blessings are way better than anything you get out there. But can I just say, do not minimize how tempting the do-it-myself apple is. I can control this relationship. I can fix this. You get jealous. I can sort this. He says, leave it at the door. Oh, no, I can't do that. He said, I remember hearing a person do an interview, a sports player, and he said, this person did wrong to me. He said, I will never forgive them, and I've got a long memory. God says, not in my coat you don't. You've got to let things like that go. You say, you know what? I enjoy a bit of playing around on the side, living life outside of covenant righteousness. He says, not in my coat you don't. You've got to let that go. You can't get involved in sexual immorality. You can't get involved in these things anymore. They're outside of the coat. So to take the coat is not just to say, oh, that's really nice, but it's actually to exchange, give up your life. But what you're getting is access to the living God. You're getting cleansed. I can still remember, I was that teenager. I knew what to do. When you grow up in church, sometimes it becomes horrible because you know what to do, but you don't want to do it. But you do want to do it, but you don't want to do it. You want to do what all your friends are doing. So you're sort of trying to do what your friends are doing, but you can't do what they're doing because you feel so guilty doing it. And so I hate myself for doing it, then I hate myself here, and I'm just so messed up, and I'm just, my heart's here. And then there came a time when I just, you know what? I'm yours, God. I'm yours, God. And when I did that, I can still remember my 22 Ferguson Street, Yarrawonga, bedroom at the end of the house. I can still remember this, laying down in bed at night and feeling clean. Not just clean on the outside, actually clean on the inside. Thinking, this is the most amazing feeling ever. Can't buy it, can't earn it, you can just receive it by faith. Thank you, Jesus. I remember laying there and just enjoying knowing that me and God are friends. Knowing me and God are connected, I'm righteous. Not with my righteousness, but now I've got Jesus' righteousness. All my stuff's dealt with. What an amazing peace. Says, this is our message to people. Hey, people, there's a coat. There's a coat for you. It's Jesus' coat. He's made a covenant for you. It's already done. You don't have to earn it. Don't have to struggle. First of all, I don't know, maybe you've never put on this coat. And you just want someone to say, I'll pray with you. I'll help you. That's what we've done here at the church. That's why we exist. We've just people that have put on this coat, become followers of Jesus. And as a 16-year-old laying in bed, enjoying what it means to be clean. And then last night I'm laying in bed, enjoying what it means to be clean, a relationship with God. It's an awesome life. Everyone deserves that opportunity. Doesn't mean there's not challenges. Doesn't mean there's not sacrifices in terms. You've got to lay off old things. You've got to put them off and embrace. You've got to change the way you think. But it's a good journey. and is with you in the journey.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast from Breakthrough Church. We hope it helps you in your life as a follower of Jesus. If you have any questions or would like someone to talk to or to pray with, we would love to hear from you. You can find all of our contact details at breakthrough.org.au. Have a great week.